Chapter 12, Creating the 46th State. Chapter Preview, Terms, Interurban, Boll Weevil, Subscription School, Enabling Act, Progressive Movement, Referendum, Governor, Bicameral, Amendment, Initiative, Suffrage, Prohibition, Jim Crow Laws, Charter. People: J. H. Lawhead, Charles N. Haskell, William H. Murray. Places: Ponca City, Shawnee, El Reno, Sepulpa, Tulsa, Sequoia. Phenomenal changes took place in the country's heartland between the first land run in 1889 and statehood in 1907. The changes, scorned by some and welcomed by others, affected many lives. Tumultuous changes had been forced upon thousands of Native Americans in a relatively short span of time. For the thousands of homesteaders, the changes were welcomed and signified new hopes and dreams. Section 1. Growth in the Territories. As you read, look for the importance of the railroads to Oklahoma's growth, crops grown in the Twin Territories, the development of schools in Oklahoma Territory, and vocabulary terms, interurban, boll weevil, and subscription school. Activity across both Indian Territory and Oklahoma Territory was occurring at a fevered pace. Towns, farms, businesses, and industries were growing rapidly as new settlers kept coming. The Native Americans were dealing not only with the daily routine of life, but also with seeing their way of life being stripped away. The territories appeared destined for statehood, but when and how were questions that remained to be answered. Railroad power. While people fueled the settlement of America and Oklahoma, railroads played a large role in making it happen at a faster rate. The first railways in England and in America consisted of wagons drawn by horses over wooden rails. In 1829, George Stephenson won a contest in England for building the fastest steam-powered locomotive. American engineers quickly put the technology to work, and railroads soon became a leading industry that spread across the country. Importance of railroads. The railroads noisily came into Indian Territory. Profits were made from the sale of coal, asphalt, and timber, but the railroads also brought losses in the form of forever changed lifestyles. The trains brought loads of boomers into Oklahoma Territory as land openings settled the territory piece by piece. People and their belongings were moved quickly by train, and people didn't feel so isolated from family and friends when they relocated. The Santa Fe, Frisco, Rock Island, and Katy railroads continued pushing across the Indian and Oklahoma territories. Railroad companies could lay out town sites along their routes, but sometimes people in a community went shopping for a railroad. A railroad almost guaranteed growth for a community, and towns that were bypassed found it hard to compete. The Santa Fe Railroad originally stopped at Cross in Kay County, which, like many railroad stops, consisted mainly of a wood frame station and a small house for the railroad agent. An independent town site company established Ponca City near a good supply of spring water a short distance from Cross. Ponca City leaders had promised town lot buyers that the train would stop in the community, and with some political pressure, the Santa Fe agreed to the stop, bypassing Cross. Bitterness and sometimes violence erupted between railroad-backed towns such as Kildare, Wharton, Jefferson, and North Enid, and the government-designated county seats such as Newkirk, Perry, Pond Creek, and Enid. the railroads often refused initially to recognize the new towns and would speed through them without even blowing a whistle. Growing towns. The Santa Fe Railroad arrived in Oklahoma City in 1897, linking it to Salpulpa, Tulsa, Kansas City, and St. Louis. By 1904, the landlocked prairie town was crisscrossed by four railroads connecting it to the rest of the world. Much of Oklahoma's wealth of cotton, cattle, horses, mules, wheat, fruit, corn, produce, and minerals exited the state from the freight yards at what is now called Bricktown. Machinery, hardware, farm implements, wagons, and household goods were among the seemingly endless items carried on the inbound trains. Shawnee rivaled Oklahoma City in the railroad industry, beginning when the Choctaw Railroad, later absorbed by the Rock Island, moved its main repair shops and workforce of 1,000 men there from McAllister in the late 1890s. A strong agriculture base of cotton, potatoes, and peaches, along with feed stores, wagon yards, and a factory that made roundhouse overalls, fueled the railroads. In the early 1900s, the Santa Fe built a lavish Bedford Rock Depot for the bustling business. As the gateway, the railroad station was designed to reflect the community. Many Czechs moved to the territory to work on the railroads in the El Reno area, which became another major rail center. El Reno, like other railroad towns, boomed, while its sister town across the North Canadian River, Reno City, dissolved. In 1902, the Frisco Railroad made Sepulpa its division headquarters. An electric light franchise was soon approved, and a new waterworks system was built. The railroad brought rapid growth, and by 1903, new businesses included a meatpacking house, ice plant, wagon factory, bottling works, and a brick plant. Leaders in Tulsa wanted to capture some of the growth Sepulpa was experiencing. The Tulsans tried to get the Frisco to move its headquarters across the Arkansas River, but at the time, Tulsa didn't have a reliable water supply. When Tulsa leaders learned that the Katy Railroad didn't plan to make their town a stop, they quickly took action. Tulsa's commercial club offered the railroad a $12,000 bonus and right-of-way land if it would stop in Tulsa. The Katy changed its plans to include the Tulsa stop. Interurbans, short railroads or electric trolleys, first appeared in Oklahoma City in 1902. The success of the Metropolitan Railway Company brought other interurbans to Guthrie, Norman, El Reno, McAllister, Muskogee, and many other communities. Automobiles eventually led to the demise of interurbans and passenger rail service. Agriculture. Some of the Indians had been producing corn, wheat, cotton, and cattle in the territories, primarily in the eastern areas, for many years. Their success, as with any farmer, depended upon the rainfall. Sorghum cane was one of the first crops planted by many of the settlers. The grain on the top of the cane was made into livestock feed, and the cane or stalk was used to make sorghum molasses, a sweetener. Many of the first settlers came from areas that grew corn, but they soon learned that corn usually couldn't survive a hot, dry western Oklahoma summer. Settlers also grew oats and maize for livestock feed. Oklahoma led the nation for several years in the production of broom corn, which was used to make brooms and brushes. Cotton became the most popular crop in many parts of the territories. Cotton could be planted with simple equipment and didn't require large amounts of rain, but it did require a great deal of work. Weeds had to be chopped from the cotton with a hoe so they wouldn't compete for the sparse moisture, and the crop had to be plowed several times. The flowers of the cotton plant developed into round bowls where the fibers are formed. In the fall, the cotton bowls would open. Cotton pulling involved hand-picking the cotton from each bowl on the stalk. The person picking the cotton pulled a 12-foot-long canvas sack to put the cotton in. When full, the heavy sacks were weighed and emptied into a wagon. When the wagon was full, it was taken to the nearest gin, where it was made into a bale. Farmers could then sell their bales to a cotton buyer or wait for a better offer if they didn't need the money right then. Wagons would fill the towns, usually on Saturdays, as the farm families came to sell their cotton. When their cotton was sold, families would buy supplies or clothes and usually spend the night in the wagon yard. At the turn of the century, the boll weevil arrived in the Twin Territories. The boll weevil is an insect that attacks the boll of the cotton plant. The weevil destroyed cotton crops until farmers learned how to eradicate it. Growing wheat required a lot of heavy equipment, such as a seed drill to plant the wheat, a binder to cut the grain and tie it into bundles, and a threshing machine to separate the wheat grain from the stalk. The Germans from Russia, who settled in central and western Oklahoma, brought hard red winter wheat seeds with them. The crop was suited to the sometimes drastic climate changes in the territories. Wheat production increased greatly with the availability of better and more affordable equipment soon after World War I. The early settlers used horses and mules for farming and for transportation. Every farm had milk cows as well as chickens and hogs, both of which were used for food. Wild game and fish added occasional variety. Preserved pork provided the farm family with meat for several months. Cattle and other livestock were raised and sold. Education. Most of the people in the territories recognized education as a necessity. The first settlers wasted no time in setting up schools, regardless of whether they lived in a town or on a farm. Later, the school became the social center of the community, and people would gather there to sing and to hold box suppers, literary readings, or spelling bees. The first schools sometimes started in a tent, dugout, sod house, log house, or whatever shelter was common to the area. Many of the early schools were subscription schools, which meant that parents paid a monthly fee, usually ranging from $1 to $2. Length of the school year, availability of books, and subjects taught varied greatly, as did the qualifications of the teachers. Penmanship drills, reading from the McGuffey Reader, spelling, ciphering, arithmetic, history, and geography were among the subjects studied. The 1890 Organic Act provided for the establishment of schools in Oklahoma Territory, which gradually replaced the subscription schools. Governor Steele appointed J.H. Lawhead as the first territorial superintendent of schools. The estimated school population in 1891 was over 21,000. By 1896, the number was 88,000. Long-established patterns of cultural and racial beliefs came with the settlers and territorial leaders. For some, the beliefs included the separation of whites and African Americans in the schools, as well as many other areas. For the first several years in Oklahoma Territory, counties were given the option of deciding whether to have mixed or separate schools. In 1897, however, mixed schools became unlawful. Educational opportunities for blacks improved somewhat, but black children in rural areas rarely had the opportunity to attend school beyond eighth grade. Mining. Salt and coal mines played an important role in the Twin Territories for years. Lead and zinc, found in several areas of the territories, became a major industry. Some lead was surface mined in northeastern Oklahoma for ammunition during the Civil War, but the mineral was largely untapped until 1891. The Peoria Mining Land Company of New Jersey opened mines near Peoria in Indian Territory. Other veins were discovered around Quapaw in 1904, and the mining area was expanded to Miami, Pitcher, and Commerce a few years later. Combined with the rich finds in southwestern Missouri and southeastern Kansas, the area became known as the Tri-State District, or Joplin Region. The region was home to hundreds of small mining and milling companies. The largest ore discovery came in 1913 in downtown Pitcher. In 1926, Ottawa County was the world's largest source of lead and zinc. The Ruby Stucco Mill in Blaine County was the first gypsum mill in Oklahoma Territory. Some of the purest gypsum in the world is still produced in the Southard area in Blaine County. Much of the rest of the country was first introduced to the territory's gypsum at the 1904 St. Louis World's Fair. The territorial legislature appropriated $40,000 to erect a booth at the fair to showcase the territory. Gypsum from an experimental mill in Caddo County was used to make the outside stucco of the building, and gypsum from Blaine County was used in the interior. Two large blocks of white, sparkling gypsum, 3 feet by 8 feet, served as columns. Thousands of petrified roses, native sandstone crystal rose rocks, were handed out as souvenirs. Dr. H. W. Nichols of the Field Museum in Chicago published a paper on the sand barite crystals. Towns sprang up quickly when gold fever hit the Wichita Mountains area in Oklahoma Territory. The early Spanish explorers were the first to search for gold in the mountains. In the early 1890s, prospectors found evidence of gold. By 1895, miners were swarming into the Kiowa, Comanche, and Apache reservation. Soldiers from nearby Fort Sill and Indian police tried to keep the gold-hungry prospectors out of the area. When the area was opened to settlement in 1901, people were waiting to make their fortune in gold, and over 2,000 mining claims were filed in a 9-year span. The mining towns of Wildman, Golden Pass, Craterville, Oriana, Hollis, Doris, and Mears were quickly established. The gold fever ended when a geologist determined that most of the ore had no economic value. It's your turn. Number 1. Why would a town give a railroad bonus money? Number 2. Why was the boll weevil harmful to Oklahoma agriculture?